Good morning, everyone. Always remember, two is company, three is a crowd. And we're here this morning, and it's the same as if we were filled up to the top. Does it make any difference? Because the policy of this lodge is to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And as you see, we have this little yellow pamphlet that we pick up and read at the beginning of most of our meetings. It's called the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And the wording is, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but doesn't concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profound conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race or creed or sex, condition or organization. And it welcomes to its association, repeat, it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. Incidentally, the following is the form signed by associates of the United Lodge of Theosophists, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge as set forth in the declaration. I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. This morning, being Sunday, April the 1st, Easter, the birth of nature. As you notice, the doors opened promptly at 10:30. We began at 11. We'll be done by noon. On Wednesdays, we opened the door at 5:15. And you may be in the library till 7:15, and you have 15 minutes before we begin the study class, In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. Everybody is invited. We covered everything, and we recommend that before you leave, pick up one of these wonderful little pamphlets. They're short and to the point. As is our custom, we have a short reading. Today, it's from the Voice of the Silence. And another little pamphlet from Gayatri Mantra. If you'd like to know what that means, come in Wednesday night and visit our library, where you will find a glossary of terms. From the Voice of the Silence, the light from the One Master, the one unfading golden light of spirit, shoots its effulgent beams on the disciple from the very first. Its rays thread through the thick, dark clouds of matter. Now here, now there, these rays illuminate like sunsparks, like the earth through the thick foliage of the jungle growth. But, O disciple, unless the flesh is passive, head cool, and the soul is firm and pure as flaming diamond, the radiance will not reach the chamber. Its sunlight will not warm the heart, nor will the mystic sounds of the Akashic heights reach the ear, however eager at the final stage. We have one more, a little verse here. Using terms from the Far East, and again we say, check this out in our library. It's from the Gayatri Mantra. That which giveth sustenance to the universe and to ourselves, from which all doth proceed and unto which all must return, that thou art. In the golden vase of thine earthly body, may the pure light of the spiritual sun shine forth, that thou mayest know the truth and do thy whole duty on thy journey back to the sacred seat. Welcome to our lecture this morning.
Good morning, friends, and happy Easter. So today is a celebration. It is the central point of Christianity, but it is in the most holy day, although some people may think that Christmas is the holiest day, but Christmas is the promise, as it were, and Easter is the realization that we can transcend this flesh, that we are not just flesh and bones, that we are spirit, that the symbol of the cross, that it's matter meets spirit, and it's a sense, an equilibrium, when we get to the human kingdom. So we evolve up through the lower kingdoms, we meaning the monad, our highest principles, which are everywhere and in everything. So today we celebrate that that we can crucify matter, as it were, by raising it up. And so the flesh, by crucifying our terrestrial patterns, we raise up the cross, and we roll back the stone of matter from the door of our inner sanctuary. Christos means the purified esoterically. It also means the way and the path. Now, the only God that man comes in contact with is his own God, called spirit, soul, mind, or consciousness. And out of these three are one. So the Christos is the resurrection of the Christos. Now the Christos is the initiate who is on the path. And it is said that that the whole crucifixion scene is actually allegorical, but unfortunately it has been taken to mean that it was one person who was the only begotten Son of God, and that he was risen up on the cross, that he suffered, died, and was resurrected, and that this great sacrifice is vicariously transferred to all of humanity as long as they believe in him. But that is blind belief, and theosophy is pistos, the Greek word pistos, which is faith based on knowledge by self-induced and self-devised means. So the Christos or Christ is not a unique title, but a state or condition. It's the last in a series of progressive awakenings of the soul. Now, the first reading was from The Voice of the Silence, which is a devotional treatise par excellence, and it was translated by H.P. Blavatsky. She only translated three little portions of it, of the 39 that she had committed by heart. And the second reading was from the Gayatri Mantra, which is a hymn to the sun. But so Easter is a universal festival. The ancient Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Norsemen, the Scandinavians, they all worship the egg. The egg being that great potentiality, that limitless sphere that has all of life within it. It's also called the mundane egg, or the egg of the world egg, the Hiranyagarbha. I think we're pronouncing it correctly, but we're not sure, which is that golden egg that we are. We are the germ. We are gods in evolution. We have the germ of perfection. We are perfectible. We do not have to rely on an outside God or hearsay in order to go through the process. Day by day, we're either like the two sides of the cross, the spirit and matter. We're either crucifying the Christ within us, or we're trying our hardest to crucify that flesh, that matter within us, so we can raise ourselves on this cross of matter. So all of the ancients, they looked at the egg. Easter comes from the goddess Ostara. It's also the Greek Astarte. The story goes that when Ostara first came to Earth at the very beginning of the world, she noticed how dark and cold everything seemed. She knew that life and everything was sleeping for a while till it was time to wake again. Then she realized that she was sent out to the earth to wake things up. Easter celebrates the awakening of life from its winter sleep. So it's the great vivifier. It's the coming forth. Easter really traditionally was celebrated on March 21st, which is the vernal equinox, when light and matter are equal, and we start to go toward the longer days. I know we set our clocks back earlier, but that's an artificial construct. During the first, really, it's kind of interesting, because in the early church, they really didn't have any of these beliefs or symbols, but they evolved from the background of the pagans who believed in these things, and then they superimposed it on Christianity. The first 150 years of the of Christianity, the people were, you know, they were still performing their other rites and of passage and of spring, but It took from about 150 AD to the Council of Nicaea before Easter was established, before the crucified Christ became an idol, as it were. And it was really Constantine was the true founder of Christianity, because he got all the bishops together who had differing ideas and beliefs and backgrounds and came from different religious, whether it be Gnostic or Jewish or Manichaean and all the other sects and religions that were around at the time. And they solidified the beliefs. And that's when they came up with that Easter would be on the first Sunday following the first full moon in spring. So it's a movable feast. It's a lunar feast. Really, which kind of seems like secondarily a solar feast, but really the solar should take primacy over the lunar. Most of the holidays in the various religious cycles were lunar feasts, but this very much is a solar feast of the awakening. So we see it all throughout nature. I'd like to read a little quote here. Happy the optimist whose heart, the nightingale of hope, can still sing. With all the iniquity and cold selfishness of the present age before his eyes. So we see this time, we see the coming forth, the opening up, the rising of the sap in the trees, the grass, the crocuses, all the flowers coming forth. They're all sprouting, they're all germinating. And with the tree, and we think with flowers too, there's a sevenfold process which is taking place. Now the seed is between Christmas and Easter. The seed is in the ground, it's in the hard ground, but there's activity going on, but it's occult activity, it's hidden. But the seed is very busy in a sense in its astral shell, getting ready and making the preparations to spring forth at this time of year. And there's a sevenfold process that in the ground. First we have the seed, then the sprout, the shoot, the branch, the leaf, the flower, and the fruit. And of course within the fruit is the seed. So there we have the cycle of life. We have the one seed presages the other seed in the next period of evolution, as it were. Or for us, it's the annual cycle every year. So the egg is a universal cycle of life, of becoming, of that potential, that germ in the seed that is, forever becoming, that is limitless. It's a sign of Atma, as it were. And then the germ in the seed, the point, is the first manifestation of that. So we have, of course, we have the Easter Bunny, and we have the hare, which is the male who suckles the young. So in a sense, we have that, in a sense, it's hermaphroditic. It's that all life has within it the potential of the other sex, although there are, we see our apparent differences, but really we're all one brotherhood. We're all connected. We go through our various existences as male and female. Also, the rabbit or the hare—it's prolific. It's quite. It's always generating life. Let's see what other symbols we have here. Okay, well, we have the egg, we have the cross, we have the hare. Well, that's three anyway. So we've been told that, to appreciate the inner significance of Easter, we must understand the symbology of the egg, the crucifixion, and the resurrection of Christ. Man has never been without a friend. We have the elder brothers who are adepts. Jesus was an adept. There's always been a debate and discussion for at least several centuries now over whether Jesus actually exist, and did he exist during the time period that he is put in. And really, there was an initiate upon the scene. Whether he was known as the name of Jesus or another name is actually insignificant. It's the principles that really matter. Apparently he did not, that initiate really did not, it does not fit in with that period, and probably lived about 100 years before 100 years BC. But again, it is not the bodily resurrection that we're concerned with, but it's the resurrection of the spirit. Unfortunately, the bodily resurrection is actually ludicrous when we consider reincarnation. Why would we want to come back into the same body that we just left? It's all worn out, you know? I mean, we've either been cremated or we're life for worms and maggots and whatnot. And in a sense, we're even more alive after the body dies. There's more life in it because the lower life forms go into the body and take over, unless, of course, we've been cremated. Christ, we must remember, too, that Christ is not the only Son of God. We are all sons of God in our divine nature. He who strives to resurrect the spirit crucified in him by his own terrestrial passions and buried deep within the sepulchre of his sinful flesh, he who has the strength to roll back the stone of matter from the door of his own inner sanctuary, he has the risen Christ in him. The Son of Man is no child of the bondwoman flesh, but verily of the free woman spirit, the child of man's own deeds and the fruit of his own spiritual labor. And that's a quote by HPB. So we talked about the Christos. So the initiation, Freud didn't mention that the initiation process is one lays on a bed, as it were, in the shape of a cross, tied to it for 3 days during the final initiation process. So there's a three full days and nights. And during this time, it's said that there are physical and psychological tortures which we must overcome. We must learn to become indifference to pleasure and to pain before we can rise above that and become able to venture forth to be a worker for humanity. The personality is destroyed. It is a vehicle. We still use it, of course, but we use it as a vehicle. We don't worship it as a god, which is unfortunately the case for most of humanity. But the purpose of the United Lodge of Theosophists is to generate the germ or nucleus of universal brotherhood, as it were, on this earth. And from that, it will spring forth, it will flower, it will germinate. And during the various cycles, we are now in a dark cycle of the Kali Yuga, which is the Iron Age or the Dark Age. But during Easter, we're not thinking about a past event of a soul individual who was crucified for our sins, died, resurrected, and then again by vicarious atonement, we can become part of that. Easter is really a bright future event for humanity. It's something that there's no telling how long it will take, but during the grand scheme, during the grand period of evolution, that there will be a race of adepts. We will be a race of adepts. We will have achieved those that are ready, not including the failures, because there's a period of separation, the wheat from the tare or chaff, that is discarded and put into the fire. But there are other opportunities for them. But those egos are kept back. And a race of glorious adepts then achieve all the grandest and the most wonderful knowledge, the limits of perfection in this great period of evolution. Because perfection, although it seems like an absolute term, it is actually a relative term, because evolution has no stop. It has no beginning, it has no end. There is no end. So we can't put a limit on perfection. It's we may not be able to imagine that. So in a sense, we need to consider these ideas for ourselves. We are not, Theosophy does not put forth any dogma whatsoever, but it posits various propositions, various universal principles that we see in ourselves and in nature, and we need to try these out. If we don't believe they're true, then we need to disprove them for ourselves. So the Lamb of God is the Agnus Dei. Actually, Agnus is fire. It's from the Hindu god. And the oldest trinity is fire, which is, it's in three forms. It's sun. The fire is three forms. It's sun, lightning, and then the manifested fire that we see. So we're going to stop here because it's funny because as you see these papers strewn over my desk, there's so much information on Easter. It's because it is such a central point, a focus for humanity and for the various religions, and we all celebrate the rites of spring. So it's actually overwhelming how much material there is. So we would like to hear from you all about the great cycles and Easter. Yes, in the back.
We never knew about, we always assumed it was a solar holiday. We didn't realize that it was really considered lunar, but one can actually put the two of them together because we talk about cycles, and especially towards the end of the year, we talk about the sun coming back. So it's kind of nice to think that it's a combination of a lunar and a solar event, because we're talking about manifestation, but we're also talking about how it's the sun that's rejuvenating that physical form. And we just thought that it's a very nice way to look at it, that it's both, that it's all encompassing.
Well, contrary to what we said in the talk, we think we would agree with you, because guess what we were trying to say was that it was moved around the lunar, but it is on a Sunday, and it is, so yes, both, well, when we think of the moon and the sun, we think of spirit and matter. So, the moon is our mother, as it were, of our physical body, but the solar petries are lit up the manas within us, the mind principle. So that is solar. So it is both. It is solar and it is lunar. Yes.
The wonderful thing about what goes on in rooms like this all over the world, especially for us modern human beings, is the terminology. We hear, but we do not see. Words go in one ear and come out the other. There's nothing in between to stop us to think. So right off the reading and the lecture this morning, we've heard, but now we go home. And the first thing we say once we do our reading, oh, I see what you mean. And then is the beginning of independent devotion to the cause, which is within each and every one of us. So we began to talk, and family would say, you're talking in riddles, I don't know what you mean. So we certainly appreciate the offering whereby we hear with these two ears and then we say, oh, now I see what you mean. And then one begins to do their own research. That is quite an adventure. That is independent devotion.
So yeah, we do see all around us. We have so many signs of life that there's life in the wintertime, of course, but it's more hidden. But now we see the manifestation, and it's all around us. The sights, the sounds, the smells are everywhere, and it wakens us up. It wakens us to a new reality, a new dawn, a new age, as it were. And we do see. Yes.
The idea of this being a season of rebirth, it was pointed out well that we see the rebirth in physical nature around us. But if it's a solar event or a spiritual birth, then wouldn't it be true that within the heart of each human being there is at least that revivification, that rekindling of that spark or that ray from our spiritual nature? And we may or may not feel it. We may or may not feel it depending on maybe the clouds or the influences of our lower nature, but there is nevertheless that re-sparking of that rebirth of the spiritual impulse in us. It's an event, you know, it's not an imaginary or a sentimental statement.
Yeah, we never really thought of it before, but kindling is wood to start a fire. So rekindling is restarting that fire within. And interesting how, I mean, there's no... English, of course, is a very interesting language, and it's borrowed from many languages, But there's so many hidden meanings within words, and that's one that just came forth. It's the rekindling, the lighting up of that fire within. Yes.
Often when we study reincarnation, we're asked to give examples. How do we know that it really exists? And we've always thought this is the perfect example of reincarnation, of rebirth, of regeneration, as we've all been talking about. So I think fundamentally, I think every human being knows that reincarnation is a reality. It's just that it's not talked about in the sense that it's reincarnation.
Right. Yes, well, the word carne, which means meat, reincarnation on its surface would just mean that we're coming back into these physical bodies, just if you take the surface of that word. But of course, it is much, much more than that, because spirit needs a vehicle. So when we reincarnate, we get a new body, we get a new brain, we get new circumstances. We come into those that we knew in the past, but still have business with, haven't maybe worked it all out. Could be family members, could be friends, associates, could be adversaries. That is one objection to reincarnation, is that, well, we don't remember our past lives. Well, there are those that do. And it is said that when we reach a certain point, we will remember our past lives. We're just not really ready for the knowledge yet. So it's actually a blessing rather than a curse for most of us that we don't remember our past lives until we've gotten to the point where we are able to deal with it impersonally and learn from it. So that is one objection to reincarnation, but it's a very, you know, there's so much evidence to the contrary. And this time of year, that evidence is staring us in the face. Yes.
So physical matter is linear and spiritual energy is cyclical. So the 360 enters the line again and then again and then again. That's interesting. So everything in nature and the solar is cyclical.
Yes,
so it's the proof of the cycle.
It is. It's all cyclical rather. It all comes back, but there is that germ that's dropped, in a sense, dropped in every time into the new egg, the new embodiment, and then it sprouts forth. In the back.
And sometimes we think back of just our regular schooling that we've had all the way around, the arrogance of mankind that everything around us has a recycling. But we don't. Mm. So you sort of wonder how that could have been built up over the centuries.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like at one time, the general populace, overwhelmingly, at least in the West, believed that the sun and the planets revolved around the Earth. And we often still act that way when it comes to ourselves, our planet, that all the others are just mere satellites, and they're just they're just circling around us. That we're but we are in a sense that we are the crown of creation, and that is something that we need to also realize, that we may not be acting the part yet, but we have all the parts. They're all there. Yes?
The egg or the Easter egg was referred to. What is the significance of the coloring of the eggs? That's the symbolism of, we do with it these days as a fun event, but does it have any other meaning?
Well, the sun, if you put a sun through a spectrum, you'll see seven colors. And so, in a sense, the egg is the central point. We could say it's the sun. We could say it's eternity. We could say it represents deity. And the colors are the constituent parts of that. And that we are all a ray of the divine. So that's one reason. There may be others. We're not familiar with any other ideas or not?
We think it was brought out that it just represents unity and diversity. Whether we're speaking of the different colors of the rainbow, different appearances of human beings, they're all from one source, so they're all reflections, the whole, but no one of them contains everything.
That's okay, good. Unity and diversity, that would just say that we need all the other colors to be complete. We're not the sun yet. We have it within us, but unity and diversity is very well put. In the back?
Well, we know that the Greek Orthodox, they dyed their eggs purple, and we know that purple is a spiritual color, but that was just something different that I thought.
Okay, well, we're not familiar with that particular... They don't dye them other colors, just purple. Purple is considered the royal color, the color of royalty. So that should have a yes.
Well, we were just wondering. We pass a lot of crosses on the outside of buildings, and at this time of year, they have some sort of purple draping around it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that the idea?
Well, that's the risen Christ, the robes. The purple is the royal color. It's the color of the sovereign. There's, like on Palm Sunday, there's white bunting or whatever you call it. And that's before the resurrection, and the other is after the resurrection. So, yes.
It's a rare snow in Israel. Then its mucus membrane is purplish, but it's so rare. It only exists in this little region, and it's associated with royalty. So like she was stating, when you see the purple draping over the cross, the cross is the direction, the latitude and longitude, and it's royal direction.
Okay, very good. Yes.
Associated with Easter, of course, is the passion, the whole telling of the story that leads up to his crucifixion in the story, and the various stages on the path there. Is there any significance between those different stations of the cross and processes of initiation?
Well, there's 14 stations of the cross, which is 2 times 7. So there's in the beginning, Christ is mocked and spat upon and given a crown of thorns. And so that has to do with the initiate must be able to withstand all the arrows that are slung at him and to be calm and possessed. We know that 3 times along the way, Christ stumbles and falls with the cross. At one point, he's given a hand up. He's given some help. I think that Simon Peter carried the cross briefly for him. So perhaps that's for the initiate to realize that he is not completely alone or without help, that there is some help out there, but the majority of the work must be done. Then, of course, Christ is nailed to the cross and risen up to suffer and hang there and die. And then there's an interesting mistranslation. We're not going to try to pronounce the Aramaic, but the way that we were taught and the way that is generally taught and believed is that as he is dying, Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? But the scholars went and they found out, they translated it from the Aramaic, and really, he says, my God, how dazzlingly thou dost glorify me, which is complete opposite. And so there's another example where the symbols and the sayings are perverted for really for earthly means and power constructs that if, you know, it's the whole poor, miserable sinner thing. But it's not. He's becoming, it's a process of becoming an adept. He's being glorified. He's not being forsaken. He's joining a grand fraternity of adepts. Yes.
We recall HPV writing in some of the articles about the Gnostics and the Egyptian mysteries that that there were various, as you pointed out, trials and initiations as part of this process, sufferings that we're going through. In our age, it's mostly a psychological initiation. But in earlier times, she mentions in Isis, there were actual physical trials and torments to prove the worthiness of the candidate. And these various stages are symbolized in that. Also in the zodiac, apparently, it's the passage through the different signs. This, if we understand the symbolism, represents the stages of the growth of the soul.
Yes, it's a grand, it's a part of the grand drama. It's Easter is it's the focal point. It's the, you know, it's really a future event, but it's, but for those that have perfected themselves in prior periods of evolution or during this period of evolution, it becomes a past event.
But it's also, we see that when we celebrated the winter solstice, we were told to make certain pledges.
Ah, yes, right.
And we were to plant seeds of the new, of the year to come, just plant seeds. And now we see these seeds will come, will
sprout,
be born. We'll see what, we will see what kind of commitment we have to our thoughts and to our pledges and to our things that we hold dear. Because every winter solstice, you know, we look within.
Right.
And we try to plan for the new year.
Yes, the astral light of the sun, of the earth rather, is young and strong. It's waxing during the period between the summer solstice and the vernal equinox or Easter. And if we keep these seeds within and let them germinate in our heart, that we can see them sprouting forth. But unlike New Year's resolutions, we shouldn't publicize them. We should keep them within so that they can sprout. Did you have your hand up?
So this event, as was said, you know, it's a future event for all. It's a past event for those who've gone through it. And it's a universal teaching. So this event that went on that is talked about in Christianity was found in the traditions of pagan religions throughout. So then maybe we could just recognize it as really a spiritual archetype which as something that will be fully realized, but is one of those things that the pivotal doctrine is intimately involved with. It'll only be realized if we individually make the effort to make that happen.
Yes. Evolution is the pivotal doctrine, and this is the Easter is the realization of that. When one has pivoted toward the spirit and fully realized themselves. In the back.
It's interesting that the term waxing was used in relationship. Not only does the astral life of the earth, meaning the generative, the creative life of the earth, wax and wane, but so does the moon. And the moon's right. Always been connected with the psychic part of nature, just as the sun connected with the spiritual. So we see those two coming together, the astral or the lunar rising up,
right.
Feel within us, and meeting the spiritual from the sun at this time. It's a very special time of the year.
It is a special time. Did you have your hand up? In the back.
Well, it was just mentioned about how the importance of this time of the year. Well, it just the fact that the significance of it is mentioned in so many different traditions, we think that would definitely put it as a very important time, because everything, as we said, is coming back to life. The farmers are starting to prepare the fields for planting, and everything is growing. People feel better. The air feels, you know, we're relieved that we can just go out whenever we want and not have to worry about, you know, being cold and snowing. Well, snow is tomorrow. But we can't say. But no, we just think because it's in so many traditions, it definitely points to the importance of this time of year.
Yes, it can snow in April, we're finding out. Rarely, but it has happened before. But what about Brazil? What about Australia? They're in the southern hemisphere. And really, all the symbols have to do with events that take place in the northern hemisphere. But they also celebrate. It's more of an occult, in a sense, celebration for them. It's all internal. They're actually moving into their autumn and then eventually their winter. But it's a reminder that the cycles will come around. The cycles will turn. Yes?
Well, even in the southern hemisphere, especially among the native peoples throughout Central and South America, even in North America, you have the recognition of the seasons and the two planting
yes.
seasons and the two harvesting seasons. And this is a very, in their mythology, this is a very important time of the year, especially in Central America, South America, where everything is very often based on the calendar, on the return of certain cycles based on the sun.
Right, and they have Quetzalcoatl, the winged serpent, down in South America, and that's another myth. Yes.
It's interesting. It was just mentioned the symbolism of the winged serpent. The wise human being in Central America, but reminds us what Jesus taught to his disciples: be wise as serpents.
Harmless as doves.
The right. symbolism of that.
Yes. Be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And often we see a serpent that is wrapped around an egg. That's another sacred symbol. So, yes.
Yeah, we think that's the main symbolism in the Central American plains, where they have that mound in the shape
of
a huge serpent figure with an egg in its mouth. Yes.
And we have serpent mounds in Ohio as well. It's doesn't look like much from the ground, but if you in the sky, you can see it. Just like there's all those lines. There's all that. Well, sacred geometry is a whole other bailiwick, as it were. But it's an interesting study. Yes.
Yeah, that Ohio mound. It's interesting. One person can look at it because you've got the serpentine snake and the egg in front of it. One person can look at it and see, well, it's a snake that's going to eat an egg because that's what snakes do. But another person can look at it and see the snake as wisdom spewing the world egg out of its mouth. And there's an idea in multiple religions that the earth is made from wisdom.
Yes. And there's the Ouroboros, which is the serpent swallowing its tail, which is a symbol of reincarnation, rebirth. So spiritual rebirth is the theme for Easter. So we need to ask ourselves if those seeds that we planted around the winter solstice, are we willing to now do the work? Because we have more energy now, are we able to do the work to see them sprout? We need to, hopefully we provided the soil, but now we need to add the water and the sunshine allegorically to these seeds, because if just left to their own devices without, you know, they may lay dormant for, like, there's seeds in Egyptian tombs that, you know, they can sprout now, but we need to not just lay dormant. Because we could lay dormant for lifetimes, for many lifetimes. We need to sprout.
Well, we're thinking that if we don't do anything, well, they may lay dormant, but more likely what's going to happen is there'll be an overgrowth of the weeds that kill them out. And so that's the point, we think, that we have to make the effort spiritually. Otherwise, the way our lower nature is, we'll just get stronger and stronger and crowd out the higher impulse.
Yes, we have to weed our garden, as it were. Time for one more? Yes.
It's rather ironic how the Catholic Church, or the Church, destroyed all the symbolism that they could find, all the statues, every reference to this ancient knowledge. But now, in this age, they preserved many of them that have very, occult significance.
Interesting, because they can change words, they can change ideas and put false ideas out there, but within the symbol, they can't, the symbol's still there. And it still has that meaning within us, because we have been impressed, our souls and our minds have been impressed with all this knowledge in ages past. It's up for us to weed it so that we can uncover it and resurrect these symbols and use them properly. So we need to close now, but happy Easter, everyone, and please come back. Thank you.